Hola, amigos.
I don't think it caught you at the beginning, but that's okay. Say it again.
Hola, and I don't know any other. So, my name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos. Finally said it right.
Rest in peace, headphone users. My sister. This happens to me. This happened to me back in school. When I get around certain people with accents, I pick up the accent. So we just watched a Hispanic movie. And so
now
thinking,
we are going to be talking the way we did before. We never talked like this as far as I know.
But yes, Matos is a Puerto Rican name or Spanish name by way of Puerto Rico.
There we go.
That was one influential thing, but we chose to watch Miss Bala because Melissa had on our list to do unlikable heroes. And I feel like this is a good chance to talk about heroes that are not necessarily unlikable, but they are forced to do unsympathetic things.
Yes.
Or they put in situations where they have some kind of moral dilemma. And you have to decide, they have to decide kind of the lesser of two evils. This is an interesting movie for that reason because I was trying to describe this to the rest of my family. Where they say, we're going to go see this movie. Oh, what kind of movie is it? Well, one of the things is that unbeknownst to me before, I watched a review of it. And they were saying that it was a reboot, or not a reboot, but just like there was another version of it, and that it was a Spanish language film. But I didn't know that going into it, or before we decided to go see it. And so that's part of it. But also, it's interesting because it's starring Michelle. What's her name? Rodriguez, Gabrielle. Anyway, the researcher is looking at.
Mon it.
The clicky clacks.
Mon it, boss.
But she is
Gina Rodriguez.
I was like thinking Gabrielle, but I'm like, that's not right. Gina Rodriguez.
This is my new favorite dude, by the way.
Which dude?
The bad guy.
Oh. my sister has a thing.
I have a thing for bad guys.
For bad boys, yes. Well, okay. That was another part of it that I was wondering. Is this going to be a YA, like, Beauty and the Beast thing when I'm going to tame the drug
guy.
Cartel thug? Because a part of the trailer makes you think, oh, like, she gets in with this guy. She has to kind of try to, under the auspices of the DA is putting her in this situation. So let me start
just
from
back
the top.
Up. Sorry.
There's a lot of different reasons why we watch this movie. We will mention them as we bring them up in the plot. So plot is Gina Rodriguez is an American who knows someone in Mexico. God's sisters.
It's her best friend.
Yeah, her best friend lives in Mexico.
Who is into beauty pageants.
Right.
And we
set up early on, Gina Rodriguez plays this kind of mousy girl that's a makeup artist. And she wants to be a fashion person. At least in the fashion industry.
Yes.
Maybe focusing on makeup, but, you know, who knows. I don't know that world. I'm assuming you don't either. But, yeah, she's going to the Miss Baja California thing because her best friend is in it. And they go out for a night on the town. Chaos ensues. There's cartel members that start shooting up the place. You kind of think that their target is the head of police who is part of this.
He's in charge of the... I don't know if he's running the
it's
thing.
Like he's like financing it.
Oh, okay. He's financing the competition.
Because that's part of why they're at that
specific
club.
They're schmoozing with him.
Yeah.
And it comes out that he's kind of creepy and sleeps with whoever wins.
Yeah, because he gropes Gina Rodriguez's character. And so she's like, I'm going to go.
I need to go to bed.
Yeah. And so at this point, like, it seems to me like her character is pretty much, I have this friend. And you get, like, there's that setup of, like, I'm not in control of my life. thing where she's like an underdog.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is there doesn't seem to be, like, in a lot of these types of things, like take Sicario, for example, there's a similar thing where Emily Blunt's character is in law enforcement and she's not really, like, high up there. She's not, like, a Tom Clancy spy person. She's not even, like, John McClane. Oh, I guess more along that John McClane thing of, like, a run-of-the-mill person who's roped into this bigger thing. Gina Rodriguez is just, like, a makeup artist. And right away, she... there's this weird thing where, like, she is taken by... Like, she escapes the club, not knowing where her friend is. And I thought it was strange because she's in the bathroom when the bad guys come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they very easily could have gone from that to, like, immediately the bad guy puts onus on her. And whatever, there might have been more of the, like, I think you're cute, and then I'm just going to put you in the...
Well, the main bad guy wasn't in there initially, right? It was the other guy that popped into the bathroom.
I thought he was in the...
I didn't think he was there. I think he... Or was he? I don't know.
Well, I just thought it was weird that they did this double thing where, like, she escapes, but then there's a guy who thinks she thinks is a cop.
Yeah.
And then he drives her to where the other bad guys are, and then that's when she gets kidnapped by the bad guys. I was like, what did... I don't know what we accomplished by having it be...
Yeah, I don't think the main guy... Oh, no, because she says the one guy had green eyes. And that was him. The main guy has green eyes.
Right. So it was just a weird... It was a weird aside because I was trying to think if they had established something.
I was thinking it was maybe because that. You get right away that he's... Like, because otherwise they would have just shot her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they would have just shot her in the bathroom and been done with it. But he's like, you have 10 seconds to get out. Like, get out of here.
Mm.
And then he's like, okay, she's not leaving.
Mm.
So let me take advantage of the fact that she's here.
I think that this is a problem with a lot of thrillers, is that when you're, especially when you're trying to set up this conflict of, there is a person who we're not sure whether they're, like, chaotic evil or, like what type of evil are they, really? That we're defining, like, what kind of bad guy are you? And they do this thing where, like, this other guy, Poyo, who is the kind of 10th second in command, puts a gun to her. Realistically, if he's going to shoot her, and they're planning on shooting everybody in this place, he's not going to hesitate. And, like, the guy doesn't say not to shoot her right away. You got that, like, that music stinger of, is he going to shoot her? And then the guy stops him.
Well, maybe they couldn't have shot her in there because then that would have tipped off the guys inside that they were coming into. Like, they had to surprise the,
chief of police.
So they couldn't shoot her then.
Right.
And they didn't want to, like, hang on to her while they're trying to slip through the crowd to get to the police chief. So they're just like, okay, look, get out. Because stuff's about to go down.
But I still don't understand why they would have...
Like, I don't know why she had to be in the bathroom when that happened. Like, they could have just busted out at any point.
There's a lot of those things that I think make the script itself messy, where there's a lot of things that aren't necessarily plot holes, but things that don't add to the drama of the thing. And so you're kind of just like, I expected this to happen, and they didn't exactly subvert my expectations in a dramatic way. Like, it doesn't mean really something that this happened. It just kind of happened a different way than you would expect.
And then some of it, too, might just be they have a messier legal system. They were trying to show that Mexico, didn't have it. Like, if this had been the U.S. and the cops show up at a shooting, they are detaining everybody that comes out of that building before, like, so, you know, there was the gun battle.
Uh-huh.
As soon as the gun battle's done, they are checking the guest list. They're going to make sure they have everybody there. They're going to, you know, like, there's going to be cops surrounding the joint, and she would have been taken in for questioning immediately,
right,
as opposed to sitting in the thing across the street for the entire night and nobody bugging to ask her questions or checking on her or anything. Like,
So wait, so are you saying that it was realistic, or that it wasn't?
Like, it's supposed to be more realistic in the sense of Mexico's police didn't care that she was over there or check out who was coming out of this thing. They're just like, it's a drug war and we don't care what's happening.
A better writing choice is to do like what Sicario did, where it was realistic enough that they didn't use exposition to walk you through different things, but they did through the cinematography and through the visual language of it in general, you learned things to have a dramatic impact without having your hand being held.
Yeah.
So like one of those things was at the border, they show you how hard it is to get out of the city, and they build the tension up so that once they get to that part where you know that there's a shootout that's about to happen, you're just like on the edge of your seat.
Right.
Whereas the way that it was filmed was very sloppy. And so you're just like, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the bad guys or what's going on to care necessarily, other than we know that her friend is out there. So that was kind of just, that was kind of a missed opportunity to me of how it was telling the thing. But I think that that's what I want to glom on to is, what we know about her is that she cares about this girl. Her and them were good enough actors that you cared about their relationship, and that I was at least engaged enough to be like, okay, I want to follow her journey to try to find her. It was like Homeward Bound. I want her to find her master.
I want her
again.
To find her friend.
I want her to find her friend. And so I'm on the ride because Gina Rodriguez can really do no wrong in terms of acting. So I want to see her get, you know, back with her friend again. So we've, like you said, she sleeps overnight in the diner. Nobody, not even the diner guy.
Yeah.
It's like, cares enough to be like, you know, I'm not going to, I won't lock you in here overnight. But yeah, she calls the girl's son and is like, yeah, well, everything will be fine. And then, like I said, the cop, who she thinks is a cop, takes her to the bad guys. His glasses reminded me of the guy in Blade Runner. He had those weird, like, types of ridges on them. Oh. That they look kind of futuristic. I was like, is this going to be like a Mexican? Is this good? Are they Trojan horsing a steampunk Mexican thing on my
no,
sister?
As cool as that would be, her mind. I will lose my mind. There should be a Mexican steampunk thing.
So at this point, is there something, as the female watching this, is there anything about it that is like annoying to you? Because we talked about with Atlanta the ineptitude of some of how they like showing some things that they have women do, young women do in shows and movies. It's just like, this is how the youth act. So like, was there anything that they were doing that you were just like, why would you do this?
No, I thought they played it fairly believably, like that the girl was all like, look, I want to win this contest, so if I have to schmooze this creepy old guy, then I'm going to do that.
Right. And they showed that
the
Gina,
other girl was
Gina
not
wasn't
happy
like,
about it.
Yeah.
Right. My only kick is the whole stupid running in heels thing, but that girl can run in heels.
Yeah, she did run
in heels. She was impressive. That was on gravel and crap. Like, that was nothing.
She did a very good job.
Good on her. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would have, when that guy drove, if that was the one part, well, at least she figured out something was wrong. She just reacted too late. When the cop first stopped and went into the thing, and she's like, no, there's something wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't try to get out of the car until she saw the bad guys.
Right.
I'd have been like, nope, taking my shoes off. There's a beach right there. We're going somewhere.
Right.
Because this isn't right.
But she gets taken to the bad guys, like, villa, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, like, impressive. It's just a house. But she gets taken to the bad guy's house. He kind of explains that, like, I'm going to put you on this mission thing. Which, again, like, at this point, it's very fuzzy in terms of, like, is he doing this just because he's treating her like any other girl that he's meeting? Or is this a ham-fisted way of setting up that there's something about her specifically that he needs to have done?
I don't think at first. I think...
Because he gives her this encrypted phone.
Right.
And I'm just like, why is he entrusting her with this thing? And they set up this thing where he tells her to drive to this very specific corner with the phone and takes her randomly to watch him blow up this place. And he's a pretty good actor, but that the script isn't making him charming enough to me to make it seem like he's trying to seduce her.
No, not at that point. That's what I'm saying. At that point, he is treating her like they would have treated any other dummy that they got. Disposable. That they could be like, look, you're going to drive this car, so if anybody finds fingerprints or if there's video or whatever, you're taking the blame for this, not us.
But I think that's another, visual storytelling thing is that the writing was good enough that they didn't hold your hand with everything. Like, he didn't, picture this as, an Ocean's 11 movie. They would show the cameras, and they would do the zoom thing, you're going to be at this corner.
Right.
And this, that was, I was thinking of all the tropes of stuff and thinking,
But that's definitely more of a heist trope thing, not necessarily this.
But I think that there are ways that they do that in thrillers to try to hold your hand and make you think, I'm not going to let anybody try to imagine what the guy's talking about. Because, there's ways that are not naturalistic dialogue that somebody goes into so that the audience understands what's going on, but that the character would not go into any detail about. So with her, it's just, you're going to go to this corner, you're going to follow the cars, and that's all she needs to know. So that's all that we get to overhear.
Right.
And then you get the idea later on because she goes to the corner, they blow up the thing, and then at the first chance that she gets, she is running to this, she's like, a white guy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's a white guy. Are you an American?
Are you an American?
Save me.
And then that's a rude awakening because he takes her. Because
that's the DEA.
And he's like, oh, it's the DEA.
And he's
agent.
Just as bad as the other guys.
Right. But through him, you have a reveal that there was this camera. So it was another weird thing because I'm like, he knew that there were it made it seem like he knew that there were specific cameras and that there was a specific reason why she was framed. So that, but it wasn't all of these things. I'm trying to think, is it specifically her? Why is there something special about her that this needs to be done versus this is just somebody that can let, like you were saying, be a scapegoat or something? But then I'm wondering, how would she be the scapegoat if she just has this phone? I think maybe not describing what the phone is made it more, because it identifies her
as part of his gang.
As part of his gang, but not necessarily that she did the explosions.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, is she assuming that get arrested?
I think it was more of a, he just wanted to have something on her.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do whatever we want you to do, because even if you go to authorities, they're just going to arrest you for being part of our gang. Have no choice right now. He was trying to get them, because it's the same thing with the girl, the other girl that she meets in the villa later.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way for them to go. You are now technically a criminal because you've been doing all this stuff with this criminal element. Whether you did it willingly or not, nobody's going to believe you that you were not a willing part of this.
Uh-huh. And you know what this hooks into? So I just watched a video on Groundhog Day. And it sets up that Bill Murray is a jerk. Not Bill Murray in prison. My forgiveness, Bill Murray. Forgive me. Because I'm not saying you're a jerk. The character in that movie is a jerk. And he is pretty obviously interested in the main Andy McDowell's character. And they put, the guy in this video was saying, shout out to Lessons from the Screenplay. It's a really good YouTube channel. He was talking about how that's the perfect situation to reveal that this guy's a jerk because he has to go to this small town. And it reveals his cynicism about life. Because he sees all these people as idiots that do this thing every year. He only cares about himself. So to him, this is he wants to move on to bigger and better things. And through the conceit of every day he has to wake up and do this the same day over and over. At first, he tries to take advantage of it. And then slowly he gets bored by that. And it drives him to this point of desperation. He tries to kill himself. All this stuff, but then he's forced to actually change. And I think that that's the thing is that with some of these things, the premise is used to reveal character versus the premise is used is an end kind of to itself. Like we want you to care about this character enough that you watch this movie from beginning to end. It's entertaining because you want to see her reunite with this person. But I kept wondering if they were going to build on the thing of like, she doesn't have control as a character. And I feel like it didn't get to that point until she was like, she's told by the agent, go infiltrate his thing, put this chip in his phone, and
we'll get you out.
And we'll get you out. And all of this time, she's a very passive character. She's not really driving. All these things are happening to her. And so I think maybe a way I would have tried to make that more entertaining is if you're getting more of that. I guess you would have to do it through exposition or something to talk about those different things about Mexico and how maybe in her situation, like, there's these different things that might have put her in the situation in life that she's in. But you only really know that she's this makeup artist. So you don't really get much more about her character. She's just...
Well, she talks with her friend some about how she doesn't really feel like she belongs either place.
Right.
Right? But that she always makes her feel at home there. Mm-hmm. Like, she's the only person in Mexico she has, really.
Right.
And you get the idea she doesn't really have anybody back home either.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of, like, not anywhere.
But I think you're, she has no belonging. I think you're projecting... There's a difference. There's the situation that she's in. And I think that, like I said, I was on board because I think the actress made you feel those emotions that were real, right? That she was alone and that she loved this person. But it didn't connect with, like I'm saying, with Bill Murray's character. Like, you know that he's alone, but part of it is his, it's more of the, this thing of like, he has to change in order to get some of that, to earn some of that thing. I'm not saying that she had to have that kind of arc, but more or less like the thing of her not having control should have had something to do with her getting to this person. And they want you to feel that, but I don't feel that until she has to start making decisions to start taking control.
Right. Because
a lot of this is, it's a very twisty, turny thing of like, this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens.
They waited a little too long to do it, but I think they wanted to definitely drive home that no one was going to help her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the police didn't help her when the first shooting happened.
Right.
They didn't help her after that, when she was trying to say, I know who the bad guys are, and the cop was a corrupt cop that just took her to the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
The bad guys weren't actually helping her, although you're never really sure. So she's not really sure, like, is this guy actually like me? Is he just trying to use me? Like, what's going on here? But she's, like, pretty sure they're horrifying criminals anyway, so let me get out of this. And then the DEA doesn't want to help her because they tell her they're going to get her out, and they do nothing to get her out of that situation in the middle of this crazy shootout.
Right.
They initiate.
Yeah. That moment with the, and I think also the fact that the DEA agent is kind of like a block of wood.
Yeah, he's terrible.
He wasn't a very good actor. But the that moment, I think, worked in terms of the line that he had, where he's saying, I expect you to do this because that's the only way that you're going to survive this. That was a moment of like, okay, this is now in her hands. There's nothing else that she can really depend on to get her friend back.
Right.
And I think that it's part of the difference between a masculine and a feminine arc. And I think it's I say that by that, I mean, like, even in something like a Die Hard, he at least has the position as a man that, and as a officer, that, like, he assumes that he has some role in trying to fix the situation. And
she's got nothing.
And it's much earlier on that he takes an active role. Whereas with her, number one, if you're going to write it realistically, she's not going to automatically become Rambo.
Right, which they did a good job of showing, I think.
Yeah. But it does make it a little less engaging because she can't be that active earlier on. And you have to kind of, like you said, build to that moment.
I thought it was interesting because I liked the tension of what decision is she going to make each time she's faced with these things.
Yeah, I was just dissatisfied with the visuals, I think. I don't think that the visuals were heightening that tension. I would compare it again with Sicario because there's a lot... That is a very slow burn movie, but the way that Denis Villeneuve uses the visuals
the to keep the tension on,
she doesn't really do very much until the middle of the movie either. But it does keep the tension going of, like, what decision is she going to make? And I think part of it that I'll concede to the movie is that because Gina Rodriguez's character doesn't have a gun, you're not really necessarily expecting her to make some kind of drastic move.
And I liked, once she's decided, okay, I'm going to have to do something to make this work, she starts doing some very creative things, I think, to do what she has to do.
Right.
And she's not passive anymore in the sense of, like, for a while there she's just terrified and she's not doing anything. But then she starts to get to the point of like she gets angry at him and she isn't afraid anymore. She like literally starts a fight with him at some point. She's like, I'm done, you gotta tell me what we're doing because I can't handle this anymore. Like, either shoot me now or tell me what's going on because I'm done with this.
That scene was really good. We're jumping the gun with that,
sorry,
but I get what you mean, that she does a very good job of making you believe that she's a real person in this situation, and that you need that's another big writerly thing to learn, is that you need to push your character to the point of believable change.
Yeah.
And that until they're pushed to a certain point, they're pressured into a certain state, a person isn't going to make that leap of like, oh, I have to do this because nobody else is going to do it.
I think it was a pretty good gradual build to that. But we should talk more after the break.
Yes. We will see you after the bump. I'm going to keep going.
Bump.
Dennis Kane has a pretty average near-death experience. White light, crisis of faith, family bonding. Don't forget delusions of grandeur. Plenty of those. After a surgery gone wrong leaves him bedridden, Dennis isn't satisfied with just regaining his strength. His harrowing journey of rehabilitation is just the beginning, as he seeks to cure his own muscle weakness, impress the girl of his dreams, and destroy his childhood bully. You know, your average delusions of grandeur. Experience the first chapter in a companion series based on the Seven Deadly Sins. Each tale will investigate the horrors of human error across history, and contrasts our corruption with the power of the gospel.
And we're back!
So we get to the point, like you said, where the policeman finally leaving it in her hands and telling her, you know, get this chip in the phone. I'm trying to think of the series of events from that point. She goes to back to the bungalow. Oh, no, she goes first to the friend's house and she is trying to say, like, is she there? The son is there. She's going to, like, go pack your stuff. I want to get you to your aunt's house. And then bad guy shows up with guy who's
with
bleeding.
Hurt bad guy.
Yeah. Hurt bad guy number four, who nobody seems to care that much about.
I wanted them all to be named about birds. They weren't all named birds, but I was having so much fun thinking they were all named after
what's
birds.
What's funny is that
there was Toucan and Pollo. And
you had much more fun with that. Because I wasn't sure. In the credits, he's Po-Yo with a Y. Is that a different word?
No, they were calling them chicken.
Is that, okay. Oh, okay.
The spelling doesn't matter.
Yeah, oh, okay.
It doesn't.
Yeah, because in
spelling in Spanish is not like in English
in
where you change
the word.
In Puerto
Rican food menus, Po-Yo is two L's.
Yes, it's supposed to be two L's technically. But in Spanish, it doesn't matter.
Oh, very good.
They don't even have spelling bees, John. They don't care. As long as it sounds correctly when
as
you
long
say
as
it, it
tastes
better.
Like that tasty
it's
stuff
very
that,
phonetic.
That your abuela makes.
That's right.
Who cares how it's
Who cares
spelled?
How it's spelled?
Sorry, little.
I want that tasty stuff. Bring it to me.
Okay, so the bad guy has a scary moment with son boy.
Lino, that's his name, right?
And then there's
the bad guy.
There's creepy bra scene.
she
has the chip and like she has to hide it somewhere, and she's like, well, I've seen people do this in movies.
All the time. Well, so, it's just convenient. So you don't know because you don't have them. It's a convenient thing.
Please don't.
Just say it. It really is. He doesn't believe me.
It was just as awkward.
It's still awkward. It's just comedic.
At least it was tense. But yes. It's kind of what I was explaining to her in how do I put this? It's not going to offend the internet.
Good luck.
In film criticism terms, and by criticism I mean critical theory, and by critical theory I mean this certain branch of film criticism that is trying to reform it's woke film criticism, but to put it bluntly. I was talking about male gaze.
Three qualifiers. Sorry.
Pay attention.
Male gaze. Yes. Okay.
So this is very much an example of this where...
To be fair, they have Lino take his shirt off too.
I thought you were going to say, to be fair, she was pretty hot.
Well, no. So he was. So everybody got eye candy in that scene.
Okay. I just, yes. But it was still... But I mean, it's just very odd. Because it feels like think if I switched bodies with like a DJ at a strip club, and I don't want to do that. I didn't sign up for that. But if you're sitting there in a movie theater, and the character happens to be going through this scene where he's obviously ogling this person, I feel like that's more of what it does for me as a viewer. It's this weird cognitive dissonance where like, I think there are ways to film this in a scene without needing to zoom in on the person, on the woman's chest or something. Like, I just think it's a weird thing that's the part of the criticism that I understand. I don't necessarily think that the idea is that, I don't necessarily agree with the idea that, like, if that's a thing that we fix about film in general, that all of a sudden we're going to fix the problems with men's...
And I mean, to like, I understand like, it being a complaint in scenes where it's unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
But I think... It's actually part of what he was doing to her.
Right,
it's
because the male screenwriter put it in there. You have to understand it as a thing that is, like... I think that there are more...
Because there have been movies where that has happened and I'm like, that was totally not even... Why was that part of this scene? This makes no sense in this scene.
But what I mean is that there are things that are obviously shameless, like in... Like, everybody uses the example of in Transformers.
Right.
Where he's checking out Megan Fox and it's a joke based on the fact that he's supposed to be normally talking to her and you're seeing it from his point of view of like, this woman is so beautiful and why is she talking to me? And he's not treating her like a person and it's trying to make that into something funny. But I kind of see it as like, if I, as a screenwriter, know that I'm going to be putting an actress in a scene, why would I put somebody through that? Like, it's not necessary. Like, not every person's going to object to that, but I don't necessarily know why I need to put that in the script. If I'm going to do that to me, I don't want to show myself with a shirt off. So why would I do that to another person? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's different because it's so ubiquitous.
Right.
But it's not necessary. And I understand the idea that it's something to look at and examine. In this scene, it makes sense, but I think there are many scenes like this.
Right, that may not be
the criticism is...
This one, it made sense to me.
Yeah.
And it went toward, you're still not sure if you like this guy or not yet. Like, I was still going back and forth of, but he did this for her, but now he's going to do this other thing. Like, what's he doing?
And
what's he not doing?
That's,
like, what's going
that's
on?
That's the part of the scene that I would defend, or it justifies it within the thematic elements of it, is that he is objectifying her.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Like, you were literally, they want you to feel that awkwardness because that is the awkwardness she is feeling.
Right.
And she does a very good job of showing you how horrified she is during that whole scene.
Right.
But he is looking at it like, well, I just want to see your body, so take off your clothes. Like,
right. But I see it as almost like that head in a fridge thing of, especially like with the last season of Game of Thrones, they were talking about that with how much rape is a part of the show. And they constantly analyze women as the horror of them possibly being exploited sexually is a defining characteristic of them as opposed to other things.
Yeah.
And so, like, there's ways to show that this person is powerful other than them escaping this objectification of, you know, this character. And I thought it was interesting that it was less about, because I feel like as a guy, if I'm writing this person just as a person, I usually put myself in the shoes of these characters and thinking of, like, what is a noble death? Because there's a lot of these ideas of, like, if I have to die to protect somebody else, I'd rather do that than dream that I can survive to find this other person that, for all I know, is perfectly safe somewhere. So, like, later on, there's the thing with the other girl that she lies. So it's like, it's more noble to me that she try to protect that other person than that she survives the, you know, awkward situation with this guy. And it's weird that that's the, all of these stories kind of use that thing.
I don't know if that, I'm going to harp on this way too long, but I don't know if it's necessarily meant to characterize her nobility.
I'm saying this because everybody, not everybody listening, but this is a big criticism of depicting women in film.
Right.
That in every situation, the threat is always, is the man going to take advantage of this person? And that a lot of people are tired of sexualizing women in that way. And I don't think within our circles we necessarily hear that all the time, because being like churchgoers and being in the circles that we are, the onus of most of our in our circles is to protect women, and that the it's less of a, we're less in conversations about like changing those types of linguistic things about writing. So I think that's the weird, I just feel like that's the weird duality of the argument. Mm-hmm. Is that if you see them as just like any other person, then why do you need to do this or that, which could be perceived as objectifying them? But on the same token, this happens to women, so why wouldn't you show it?
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing, because it depending on your mood, depending on what film criticism school you come from, you could have a completely convincing argument.
So here's why I was okay with this scene. I don't know if this could make any sense in relation to your criticisms.
Well, I'm glad to get a female perspective on it, because obviously it has a different psychological thing.
I think she acted it very well. Like, they weren't focusing quite as much on her body as they could have. And they were more focused on her reaction to what he was making her do. That's one part. Two, like I said, they weren't focusing on her body as much as they could have. She didn't take all of her clothes off, which they could have made her do. They could have done a whole lot more in that scene than what they did.
Right.
So they did not exploit that scene as much as I would have expected them to. And three, like I said, it made sense in the story. You are still trying to figure out how afraid of this guy to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he a rapist? Is he in love with her? What is going on? Like, in his weird mind, you have no idea. So the tension of that scene to me was, what is he going to do and what is she going to do about it? And how much is she willing to put up with to try and bring them down at this point? Because at this point she's realizing, I have to do something to get my friend out and not believe any of these people, because none of them are telling me anything true.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to take care of this.
Right.
But that means I might have to stay here a while and put up with whatever crap they're going to do to me to get that done. Which is to me why, yes, it was not very noble when she tries to move the chip around in the phone so that she doesn't get caught as the mole for the DEA, but then they catch it in the other girl's phone and she has to get killed. Right.
So I would criticize that as a, if you're going to see this like any other thriller, you're writing this person as a John McClane, a like picture of Samuel Jackson gets shot in that movie, and it's just like, whoops, like, he had this other person get killed so that he could, you know, survive. I think in that situation with a guy, you would, not you specifically, but the viewer would be like, how could they let that happen? And how could the script not acknowledge that this is happening? But I thought they did a good job, at least, of convincing you that this was a big enough, like, risk for her. And
it's not like she didn't try to do something. She did try to do something. She just didn't, like, jump in front of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
But she did try to talk to the guy and stop, you know.
Right.
They just,
right.
like, get
yeah,
her out of here.
That's the part that it's like, you know, she didn't do the Jennifer Lawrence, like, I volunteer as tribute
right.
stuff. But, like, it seemed like she was trying to stop it from happening. But, yeah, so there's this... the midway point where there is a kind of satisfying moment is that they get caught in this crossfire with the DA agent who's trying to get her to, you know, get a clean shot on the big bad. And she chooses to rescue, what's his name's life?
Lino.
Yeah. Who's the big bad. And, that, and it kind of has that reversal where you're like, well, he shot this woman.
Yeah.
So you're like, I don't think that this...
Maybe no, because that was after that.
Right, that's what I mean. Right. Which was after what?
He shoots her after he rescues her.
Right, that's what I mean. We went out of order.
Yeah.
So the...
But that is when you see it on his face. He did act that very well. You see it on his face now that there is more to her than what he thought. And he is now into her. Like,
right.
The second she saves his life... It's this whole, okay, who is this chick? We're keeping her
right.
thing.
And I think that's the part of it that I showed my cards a little bit because I was saying that it's kind of like a very dry version of a telenovela because there's, and that's not to insult it, but what I mean is that like it has some of those elements that I'm familiar with of this is a very gritty thriller where it's showing you all these elements and it's not romanticizing any of it. It's not like a Casino Royale
right.
type thing where like some of the scum and villainy has some luxury to it. It's very much like, no, these are people that smoke drugs and, you know, prostitute women and things like that. And so you're getting all of this stuff, but then the telenovela aspect of it is that the dramatic elements are only there's, it's very simple in that sense of
yeah.
like, oh, she saved my life. Now I trust her. And I was expecting more double crossing to go on and more like complexity of like, oh no, this person was a mole the whole time or that type of thing. There was one twist that we'll get to.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't want to see this, just want to hear us talk about it. So you get that the guy, trust her, but then shoots the girl once she switches the phone thing out. And then he has this idea of, like, I'm going to go kill the corrupt police officer. The guy at the beginning of the film that you saw was trying to flirt with the contestants. And you're going to enter the pageant, he tells Gina
Rodriguez.
Yeah,
so that you can get him alone, and we're going to kill him.
And we're going to kill him because he reveals, spoiler alert, that her friend has been sold into this sex slavery and that he says the policeman guy's the one doing this and I'm the one that's going to be the white knight, save the day, and get your friend back. So this is the part where it's actually like there's also a little gun training. So she is a little bit more equipped.
So she knows how to shoot an automatic weapon now, or
yeah.
semi-automatic. I don't know what that thing was, but
so he's like, in case of an emergency, you have this new skill set, and they go to the pageant. She wins. It's like a fixed winning, but she is like all dolled up and at this party.
Tanya, man, running in heels. That chick must have like practiced like I don't know what.
She's not running yet in terms of the plot. she gets to the party. She starts schmoozing with the guy. She sees her friend, but she's not supposed to talk to her because she's supposed to wait for this specific moment. And then she sees on her, another spoiler alert, she sees on her friend's arm that she's branded with the tattoo that buff bad Lino guy dude. That, yes.
The Estrellas signature tattoo. Which is an E with a star, which I thought was kind of cool.
Right. Bad boys.
You know, it's a thing.
So,
Man, Mexicans with green eyes don't happen every day, okay?
He was So that was another thing, was that I thought that they were going to try to make it kind of Beauty and the Beast in the sense of, like, she learns. And what's funny about it is that I'm going to name this man Maniac Pixie Dream Girl. But really, he was kind of her. That's actually the trope of his character.
Oh, usually, he's the manic,
usually the girl, manic
pixie dream guy?
The girl is this, like, very airy, you know, free spirit. And she forces this guy out of his shell. And then, for some reason, she has to leave. And now his life is better because this woman existed. God chose her out of all these women to improve this man's life. Now, in this movie, the bad boy taught her how to shoot long enough for her to shoot, spoiler alert,
him
and the police.
And the corrupt police chief.
Yeah.
And some other people who tried to grab her on the way out of the party.
Yeah.
I'm like, so Manic Pixie Dream Guy.
Yes.
Is there in her life to train her to be the...
I'm not changing the title, but...
the tough...
Right. So that to me is what ultimately I didn't connect with, especially because they tease that she might be like their inside girl who might go out and fight.
I love it. I'm telling you, I want to watch the show.
You love it because it's a power fantasy.
Yes.
And it fits all these dreams of...
I can learn to shoot an automatic weapon and
in a day.
A beauty patch. Yeah, in 5 minutes.
In 5 minutes, so that to the point where the CIA wants to recruit me.
Yeah, so I can be a CIA recruiter.
They based that off of a photograph of her in a dress.
Yeah.
With an AK. Oy vey.
So great.
It's great because it's trashy.
Yes.
But I feel like that's the part where it messed. Like the I wanted her to, because of, like, I like those gritty types of thrillers where they're not sugarcoating all the stuff of, like, what the criminals do. And Gina Rodriguez, like you were saying, with her acting, makes you believe that she's really in danger and that at any moment she could just die. And, like,
yeah.
And that rather than it being, I'll give the script credit that rather than immediately making her Rambo, it does have it's a little bit visually, I think, lazy with it, but in terms of her character work, it builds to the point where she is really starting to take control. I think it could have done better in terms of aligning the different things to where you believed that at the end, because it's a cool, like, that's another part of why I wanted to see this, was you don't get many single female lead Hispanic,
yes,
like, action hero movies. And while I'm not, like, out there rooting for every girl to be a masculine type of a hero, like, she can be a hero in other ways. And I'm all for doing different types of stories where, like, they're not, like, womanhood is not, to me, becoming Rambo. But at the same time, like, her getting her own movie, she deserves a movie.
Yeah.
Gina Rodriguez has done enough within Hollywood and within her TV show to warrant her own vehicle as a actress. That's more of what I mean, is that, like, that's why I wanted to see it, because I know that she's talented.
Yeah.
And that she deserved her own.
And to be fair, I like the whole, and it could have, like I said, it could have been more exploitative than it was. I like the whole idea of, you guys don't think I'm anything. Mm-hmm. Even Lino at the end, when she has the gun and has been shooting people already, mm-hmm. doesn't think she's going to shoot him.
Right.
For whatever to be reason, because he's not the brightest bulb in the... I don't know why he doesn't think she's going to shoot him, because at this point she's like, I just shot somebody and I'm standing here pointing a gun at you and I know you lied to me.
Uh-huh.
Get out of my way. And he still just stands there. Just like, okay, fine. Bang. Like, did you not think I would kill you?
I think that was better at it than... Like, take, for example, the Snoke thing. Like, when he's talking to Kylo Ren, it's like, I don't know what he's done to make you think that he's not going to kill you right now.
Like, really?
And they didn't do anything with the Snoke character to make you believe like he has something that he's doing. Like he wasn't really a character.
No.
Of all the things that people talk about Last Jedi,
that one I
that's
agree
one with. I agree with because like not like he's like I want to do this. You were just like he's the big bad guy. Oh, we killed. Oh well, I guess
okay,
it
I guess
doesn't
not
matter. So with it, like I think they set him up enough that he seemed deluded enough within his own ego to think, oh, she's not going to shoot me. Like, right. She was all, it's all going according to plan.
Because, like I said, too, when I used to watch things like Alias, Alias, the chick in Alias is basically what this chick is going to become if they make sequels, where she's the CIA undercover
right.
person.
But, like, what you were saying, every time she goes to flirt with a guy, it's always, how on earth does this,
yeah, this
idiot
guy
think
she's
realize
actually there for you?
Yeah.
You have a government briefcase handcuffed to your thing, and you're the nerdiest guy in the room, but she came after you? You don't think you're dying tonight? Like, what is
and
wrong
think,
with you?
I think I think that's much more transparent in terms of this is just for women to watch this beautiful, strong person.
Yeah.
Beat the crap out of
dumb
or
guys.
Or seduce dumb guys every week versus the way that this set it up. It was like it sets up this guy character who is obviously very egomaniacal, and I think that the actor did enough to where it's like I believe that this guy is deluded enough that he believes what happened and that he exhibits he's intimidating enough that you're like, oh, he really did manipulate her a little bit, but finally she overcame him.
And part of it too, I think.
So it wasn't to me just a power fantasy.
Right.
It wasn't just like, oh, this, like, all men are stupid and
no,
they all think what they're, you know.
Yeah. But I think too, you're talking still about like the simplicity of the story and how telenovela like it was. To me, I feel very much like in Mexican culture, women are still where we were like a couple decades ago.
Mm.
Because they have not, I mean, they have some women's liberation stuff going on, but it is still a very man-centered culture.
Mm-hmm.
Up here, I think we're a lot more open about talking about different things and giving women more power than they are in Mexico. So I think in Mexico, you have to think of this as, in their culture, women are invisible. You are there as an object and very little else.
Right.
So the idea that this is their power fantasy thing,
right.
It is, because they're still, they haven't had that as much
right.
yet.
And I think that's the part of, and I think with anything like this, and I'm trying to be careful with this.
And but, I'm sorry, I don't mean to make a big blanket statement about Mexican culture.
Well,
but what
I think you're touching on that I think is true is that in different cultures, they examine things in different ways. So let's say, like, there are plenty of people that crossed over here. Like, take Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson, as an actor, has gotten to the point where he can do whatever he wants.
Yes.
In America.
Yes.
But when you're doing a crossover movie like this, where it's based on a Mexican story, Gina Rodriguez, I think, if our interpretation is right, is trying to give Mexican and Mexican-American women this thing. And she's
yeah.
trying to bring this Mexican story over here
right.
to show this is a story of a Mexican woman, a Mexican-American woman, being strong. And so I think it's similar to, like, what you would say with, like, a Tyler Perry movie, where it's I don't like the Why Did I Get Married movies. It's trying to show this community understanding how the Black culture is talking about marriage.
Right.
And how, like, this is how we're showing how marriage is. And in that culture, it's a lot different than white people talking about marriage and white people talking about their relationships. And there are critics that will degrade it by saying it's not up to the standards of what the kind of arbitrary standards of what they think a movie is. But I think there's a difference between a movie being for a culture and meaning very something very different for certain
right,
people.
Right, for a different culture.
It's not necessarily that the quality is different. It's just culturally
it's a different,
different
type of storytelling.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be interested to see the Spanish version, the Mexican version of the movie. I'd be interested to look more into things like The Queen of the South or the other telenovela I was watching about the Mexican president's wife.
Uh-huh, right.
Where they are now getting these very...
Mm-hmm. But I think
I can
that,
beat you up, female
like,
characters.
Like for example, in the house, what is it called? Your Mom's House. That's what it's called. Your Mom's House podcast. The one Christina Pajdzinski is a comedian. You're not listening right now, but if you are, shout out to that chat, that YouTube. Well, they have a YouTube channel and a podcast. But she talks about Oscar movies as white bummer movies. And I thought that was funny because there's a thing in America that we define as a good film. And I think white guys that talk about film on the internet are defining it as this is what works in America in an American film. And they might have a bias in terms of their own personal taste, but there's this idea of what makes a good movie. And I think if you get into some differences in culture, there's differences, especially in terms of sentimentality. You made a good point with like some German films and some Japanese films. There's a difference in terms of emotions and how they convey them. And so it makes it difficult in terms of what you're able to say about the standards, because it's not necessarily for you individually. So I think that it's kind of arbitrary in terms of for me to say, because I have the subjective American opinion of what a thriller should be. And so when I'm kind of projecting that onto it, I think it's hard for me to translate for like, okay, this is my only reference is telenovelas for Mexican stuff. Like
we need to,
to me,
that.
Everything
to
that is filmed
Mexican
in that country is a telenovela. That's not necessarily
it's
true.
Terrible.
But no, but that's what I'm saying. It has that connotation to us because we're ignorant Americans. If I had if I was less ignorant of Mexican film and of Mexican shows, then I would have more of a grammar, more of a syntax of like, oh, this is because in 1947 there was a great American romance romance, and so that's, you know, taking from that tradition of this subset of films from that time. Like, I don't really have that knowledge, so I can only think of it as like, oh, this is different dramatically because they have a different thing, and I that in my mind correlates to it's less, but it's not necessarily less. It's just their version of that thing.
So, what little I have studied of Spanish theater in general, not just Mexican, but Spanish speaking.
This is why she's on this podcast, folks. Because every now and again, she'll be like, "Well, I studied Spanish theater."
Well, I studied Spanish literature. I guess I should put it that way.
Okay.
Because in college, I took a lot of Spanish classes. My minor, so I ended up doing like lit classes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you watch any modern Spanish comedy shows, and I've never even watched it for very long because it drives me insane, everything is still very archetypal.
Uh-huh.
And the comedies to the point where like they're very stylized costumes and people
dress
specific as specific characters, like know what that character is just by the way they're dressed, right?
Right.
So, but that's the comedy side. That's very light kind of stuff. In the dramas, it's all very, I still think relative to like, if you're like, you were saying a simple story, but not simple in the sense that it's bad, just simple that it's not as complex as other things, unless you get into like the edgier guys like Borges and stuff that did like, you know, the speculative
fiction. I was thinking about that with Japanese stuff. We often honor the innovators in those things because we like the individuality, and that like this is my subjective view of like when I walk through the forest, I see fox spirits, and it's like that's not what a Japanese person is watching on the
daily. Every day. But they tend towards, like I said, very archetypal types of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even then, they might see more nuance within that,
right?
Than we do,
which is like I said, I would like to
but
see.
That's how we would define
the Spanish version of this one, because what they do tend to do. So the story itself might be simplistic, but the interplay between the characters is not,
right?
Like the relationships is very, very important,
right,
in the way the story is told. So there might have been a lot more dialogue going on between her and the bat and Lino and her and the cops and like things like that, where what you're getting is the attitudes that they have towards each other, and it's less about the action, which in most thriller, American thrillers, it's more about the action
And the cinematography.
And the way that it's...
Because I was going to say, if I were to define this for my final thoughts, if I were to define this for somebody going in it for this more gritty Sicario-type movie, it doesn't do those things that you expect it to do. It's very dry in that vein, because, like you said, it's not doing all of those melodramatic things that you expect from this kind of Hispanic chick, like, flick type thing. Not chick flick, but, like...
No.
What I mean is, like a female power fantasy thing. Like, take, like, Taraji P. Henson just had, like, a 70s movie called Proud Mary, where she's, like, this Afro gun-toting blaxploitation person. Like, if you expect it to be like that, like our American thrillers in the 70s that were very, I'm a ass-kicking, you know, chick.
Right.
Like, I'm a Charlie's Angel. It's not that type of thing.
No.
And it's not, and in the vein of, like, Sicario, it's not dissecting the things about Mexico on a granular level of...
That one was a lot more political and a lot more...
Yeah. And it's leading you with the visuals to this, like, high-tension thing. It's kind of a mixture of the two. It's giving you some archetypal stuff and some of that crowd-pleasing woman power stuff, because she is learning over time to take, and it does have some of that more gritty things, but I think the mixture of the two make it kind of like its identity is kind of lost a little bit, but it's not a bad movie. Like, you won't be, I don't think you'll be disappointed if you want to go see a movie this weekend and you go see it. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. A lot of other, like, depending on what your budget is, some people are just, like, pissed off when they're like, that I expected Star Wars, dang it.
Yeah, no.
And, like, thankfully I had some extra cash, so I don't mind having spent it on this. But what are your final thoughts?
I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I think the acting was great. Like you said, it's not, you know, it's not, don't go in expecting a big shoot 'em up action movie, because it wasn't that. Yeah. And it wasn't the typical, like you said, thriller.
Taylor Sheridan type.
Right.
Thriller.
It felt like he was saying, like an action-ish telenovela kind of thing. Mm. Without quite so much melodrama.
Yeah.
And someone who believably developed an attitude of, well, if this is how life has to be, then this is what I'm going to have to do.
You know what the perfect illustration for this is? Everybody hates Quantum of Solace because it randomly turns into this chick getting revenge on Generalissimo. For the people that don't like that, don't see this movie. I didn't mind that. I feel like it was weird and that it kind of morphed the identity of that movie. Because it wasn't really about Bond.
That's why I lost. Yeah, I anymore. Lost what that movie was about because it lost its identity. But
so that I think that's the part of it is that if you don't
having
right, I think a lot of people are very like butthurt over it, and I'm like I went to see a thriller. I got a good one. I don't need Bond to like. We were talking the other day about how there's a Bond movie where he jumps over a cliff. And it makes a slide whistle noise. I didn't need slide whistle Bond.
No.
It was a perfectly fine slide Bond movie, in my opinion. But the people, if you were pissed off at Quantum Solace, you probably won't like this. But if you didn't care and you were just like, it's another good Bond movie.
You want a good.
Then you probably like this one.
Movie about somebody having to do what they have to do. It's a good way to go.
Yeah. And I think this is, it doesn't
piss Plus, me. Hey, Mexican guy with green eyes. Like, why are you going to hate that? At least I think he's Mexican. I should look up if he's actually, the actor is Mexican. Don't sigh like that at me.
Well, and that to go back to the whole,
he's Puerto Rican.
Oh.
Look at that.
But this is like,
that's why I like
I have a shot.
Shut up.
We're not crossing boundaries.
You're gonna be like, so hey, mean.
I'm Puerto Rican too. No.
But he's probably like younger than you.
But let's, I was going to say, let's hope not. I don't know what that means. Anyway, I was going to say, that's another interesting thing about that whole sexuality point that we were belaboring for far too long. But I think that it's interesting in these types of movies where it's obvious with a woman, especially if you look like Gina Rodriguez, that's going to become, it's part of the language and experience of being a woman. It's like built into the DNA of both men and women for that to happen. But I think it's interesting to talk about that and to keep that part of the film criticism dialogue, because I think that's when we go back into the 70s milieu of like, let's have seven women get tortured. And that's the whole plot of the movie.
Right.
And it's like, that's, it's a weird thing, but that's, I feel like that's one of the, go listen to our, what do you call it? The Handmaid's Tale episode. Because part of what I liked about that book is that the book is about, there's militant Christians on the one side and there's militant feminists, and they band together like, we can protect women the best way.
You're like, no.
And they use actually some of that 70s film in the classroom in one of the scenes to be like, see, we don't do this anymore. This is gross. And it's like, well, yeah, that's gross, but that doesn't mean that you, that's part of that film criticism that I don't like. It's just like, if we act like women aren't attractive, that's not going to save the world.
No.
Like, it's going to be part of that thing, especially when you have somebody who's kidnapping women for sex slavery. Like, part of it has to be part of the filmic language of the scene. But I think it is part, like, at the end, when she has those guns, she's in this, like, very revealing dress. And that's, like, part of what makes that scene powerful. And I think it's always interesting from a male point of view that, like, I wouldn't feel awesome as the cameraman in that scene. But also, it's, I think, part of that image. And it's weird to kind of make that disconnect of it, of, like, I'd, like...
So, to me, I think...
I don't know how to square that circle.
A woman should be able to choose how she wants to do that, right? If she wants to be in an awesome dress and have a gun, then go for it, chick.
Right.
You want to run in them heels all day, have fun, because I think you're psycho. But
and she's
whatever.
Very good at it, as we've
very good at it.
Stated several times.
On the other hand, I also like it very much when you have characters like Lady Brienne of Tarth or the chick that played Starbuck in Battlestar Galactica, where you're on the other extreme of things where they're not very feminine at all in the sense of, like, they're not running around in prom dresses or high heels or whatever. They're very practical and, like, I'm going to have armor and I'm going to have whatever, but I'll still kick your butt. I don't care. Like, however the chick wants to kick your butt, let her do it. How's that for a line?
Put that on a pillow.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Okay, well, that's good. I think that solves that problem. No more whining on the internet. Okay. I think we're good for this one. That's all, folks. email us at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com. Also, rate and review us on iTunes.
Yes,
for the
please.
Love of God. In one of these episodes, we'll ask you to do
we're
it.
Actually right say now. It.
It's on this one. And also, if you want to support us, we're now accepting. Give us money at anchor.fm/unboxing-story/support, or just go to our anchor page and hit the support button, whichever is easier for you.
We should put that on our Facebook. We have a Facebook and a Twitter.
So as it is said, so shall it be. What's the other things I can do? Oh yeah, unboxing story at Twitter.
Yes,
and. But you're looking at me like I have two heads. We're at Unboxing Story.
You looked at me like I was going to say something.
I wanted to give you. I was hogging the outro. We're at Unboxing Story on Facebook and Twitter. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.